You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Thursday morning, February the 15th. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock. We'll talk this hour with the former chief of CIA clandestine operations in Europe, Tyler Drumheller, who ended his 25-year-plus career with the CIA in 2005. He is the author of the new book, On the Brink, an insider's account of how the White House compromised American intelligence. While the book deals primarily with the period before the Iraq War, we will talk about whether the Bush administration appears to be on the same path with Iran. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or you can send your question or comment via email, talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Tyler Drumheller is a 25-year veteran of the CIA, former intelligence agency chief of European operations, author of On the Brink, an insider's account of how the White House compromised American intelligence. Good morning.
Thank you. Morning to you.
Yeah, thanks very much for being with us. What did you do as the chief of European operations?
Well, I oversaw the activities of the agency in Europe. Both what we did on our own and our interaction with our European allies.
Yeah, and I know you wrote a whole book on it, but in a nutshell, how did the White House compromise American intelligence?
Well, it's what they did was they basically turned the system on its head, and instead of the how it should work, which is, or the best example is probably the Cuban Missile Crisis, where the intelligence agencies bring the White House information about a potential threat, and then they react to it and develop a policy or a plan to deal with it. In this case, they came into office with a plan, with an idea about what to do in Iraq and how that related to the rest of their foreign relations plans for the Middle East, and they looked for intelligence that fit into that. And in doing that, it really corrupted the whole system.
Yeah. Tell us why you bristle when you hear President Bush or others in the administration talk about faulty intelligence leading us to the Iraq War.
Well, the question is, this is really a policy failure, not an intelligence failure. There was, certainly the CIA and our other intelligence agencies should have had more reporting. We should have had more sources on Iraq. But a lot of that was based on policy decisions made at the end of the Clinton administration, when sources were moved from Iraq to Iran and terrorism, which were seen as bigger threats and actually probably were. So the policy, but at the end, before the war started, by the fall of the late summer and the fall of 2002, we had developed sources that were telling us that the weapons program of Iraq was far less, in fact, almost non-existent, and we had also developed information that proved that the main source that was being used by the administration to justify the war to Congress and then the National Intelligence Estimates source called Curveball, which a lot of people have heard about, mm-hmm. was actually a fabricator. And so that in that sense, the agency did what they were supposed to do. The officers who worked on this did what they were supposed to do. And for that, they were looked on as, those who did this were looked on as being disloyal to the administration, not on board with the program, and ignored in a lot of cases. So then, after the things went badly, and there was no follow up, they didn't find the weapons of mass destruction and everything else that's happened, the first thing he said was, well, gee, we were given the wrong information, and it was actually stated in the beginning as if we were only reacting to what we were told. Now, they realized, I think, eventually that they've backed off that now, and they just sort of say, well, we have bad intelligence. They don't really go into the whole issue. But no, it was a policy failure, not an intelligence failure.
Our guest is Tyler Drumheller. He is author of On the Brink, an insider's account of how the White House compromised American intelligence. If you have a question for him, we invite your call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Drumheller was the CIA's chief of clandestine operations in Europe from 2001 to 2005, and he is called the highest-ranking CIA official yet to write a book on the Iraq War. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Ben Marins with you between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. After 9 o'clock this morning, Kathleen Dunn with you, talking with her guest about whether Iran is involved in the Iraq War and whether or not Iran is supplying bombs that kill American troops in Iraq. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We'll touch on that this hour as we talk with Tyler Drumheller, who is author of On the Brink, an insider's account of how the White House compromised American intelligence. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. And Tyler Drumheller, is it true that you fear that the Bush administration didn't learn its lesson with Iraq and is headed down the same path with Iran?
Well, that's a concern. It's a concern. I think that some of my former colleagues and some friends of mine who look at this do fear that they have... I hope they've learned the lesson from this, and you can't tell because the administration is much more factionalized now than it was before the Iraq War. I think there are people who have sort of learned the dangers of this, you know, using war as part of an academic process, and I think there are still some true believers who say, you know, all we need to do is go to Baghdad and turn right. And I think it is dangerous. What you were just reporting about the Iranians involved. Of course, the Iranians are involved. They've been involved from the beginning. As soon as we crossed the border and destroyed the Iraqi government, the Iranians moved in the south and into the Shia areas because that's their natural allies. And to what extent they're involved, it's hard to say because. I'm sure they viewed that from the beginning as an opportunity to expand their power, and what we've done is sort of opened the door for them there. The idea that we can deal with them militarily in the middle of what we're doing in Iraq is very dangerous because Iran's a very different proposition, much larger country, larger population, much better organized. There are some similarities in that they believe. And what's going on in the Washington end of this, and that there are Iranian exile groups and immigrant groups that are saying the same things that were heard here before the war, that if we just bomb Iran or if we just cross the border, or we do, the people are waiting to rise up against the mullahs and Ahmadinejad. Ahmadinejad's really not as important a figure. I think that's starting to come out now, the president. But the... I think that's a very dangerous proposition. I think the people of Iran probably are very, very frustrated with their government. They want to have a lot more freedom. They're very sophisticated, well-educated people. But I think that doesn't mean they want to be invaded by the United States. And I think the quickest way to sort of have them reunite and have a resumption of Iranian nationalism would be for us to attack them. I think the Baker-Hamilton paper set out a good position on this, which is to they're going to have to talk to these guys, whether they like it or not. And hopefully they're doing it already in secret. I mean, there are different ways to do it. A lot of these countries can't talk with us openly for their own purposes. So
yeah.
there are ways, diplomacy, Henry Kissinger negotiated the whole China agreement in complete secrecy before they announced it. So it doesn't always have to be announced with trumpets and bugles like these guys do.
Let me take some calls. Our lines are full for the moment. Mike in Appleton is with us first. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. I'm going to kind of change my question because it was like partially answered, and my question was, well, does your guest think that they're also, you know, compromising the information about Iran? The problem I see, and I'd really like his opinion, is that, you know, in difference of Vietnam, et cetera, here we're dealing with a country that potentially is going to get their hands on a nuclear weapon, and they're sitting on, potentially, vast quantities of oil, and we could find ourselves in a real, real difficult scenario as far as, you know, having some wild man control the world's oil supply and paying God knows what per barrel of oil. And what do we do then? You know, perhaps the thing to do is confront them now. I'd just like his opinion.
Well, I think that's true. That's my concern, too. And my concern is, though, that by attacking them, you almost guarantee that's going to happen or something along those lines is going to happen. It's always better. It sounds good now to say, let's confront them, let's go fight them. It's not going to be, it's not even going to be like Iraq. It'll be much, much worse. And the idea that some sort of rational government is going to emerge after a bloody war with the United States is gambling. And what, it's just my opinion. I believe it's far better to use war as the last default.
Yeah, let me push you a little bit more on this this Iran question, though. So you don't scratch your head and wonder when you hear President Bush at the news conference yesterday saying, "Well, I know there's no direct evidence linking the Iranian government with these, but I'm sure they're doing it."
Oh no, I think now on that side of it, I think they've known. I mean, the things they're showing now, they've known for a long time. This is nothing new. This is, as I said, the Quds Force and all the others have been dealing with the Iranian, with the Shia, have been helping them since shortly after we invaded, after the demise of Saddam's control, especially in the south. I think that what they're doing now is trying to portray that, and it's hard to tell why. I hope that it's not to prepare for an attack on Iran. I just can't imagine they'd be that crazy at this point. But I think it's more to prepare the people for the difficulties that are going to take place in Iraq and say, here's why we're having the problem. It's not the Iraqi people. It's the Iranians. And it's Iran is Cambodia and Iraq is Vietnam. And this is, and it may be trying to shape for cross-border raids or something like that. It may be a deflection of some kind from what's going on in Iraq. But it's a very dangerous proposition. I think it's perfectly legitimate to point out that the Iranians are sort of stirring the pot in Iraq. But it's the way it's being done. You're right. It makes it sound like, you know, this is a new thing, and it's just started. And it's now the other thing that they're very scared about are these new shaped charges that can go right through the tanks, and that is fairly new on the scene. But again, it's this type of weaponry has been coming from Iran for a long time. But I think the way to deal with it is not to. I mean, I don't think they react very well to threats and bluster, especially when they know that we would have a hard time backing it up. And the best thing is to engage them diplomatically.
Yeah,
and even though they're going to be very difficult to deal with, it's going to take some very heavy diplomatic lifting, it's better to do that if you consider all the deaths that are going to take place.
Yeah. So putting the battleships in the region and, Patriot missile, all that's just that's bluster on the Bush administration's
part. Well, I think it can be part of if it's part of a diplomatic offensive, if you place these assets and say, you know, don't forget we are the United States and this is, there are different ways you can go with us, but let's talk, let's before we fight. you know, some mm-hmm. that's not an unknown way of sort of setting the table. But when you're just saying we're going to, you know, yeah, we there's no effort to when you're telling them they have to publicly come out and say they're going to stop their nuclear program. That doesn't mean anything anyway. Even if they said it publicly, it wouldn't mean they probably wouldn't stop it. So mm-hmm. it's setting up benchmarks that they can't really meet, and it creates an artificial tension that's not really necessary given everything that's at play there. But I do hear when you hear that it looks like it's taking information that they already know, adding on sort of saying that this is the Iranian government trying to attack American troops. I think it's the Iranian government trying to dominate the situation in Iraq, and the American troops are in danger because of it. And if they if there are Iranian Revolutionary Guards inside Iraq and they're fighting with some of the militias against our troops, then that's part of then they're in the middle of the war. There's nothing to do about that. But the crossing the border and it just is always better. The purpose of intelligence services is to stop wars, not to start them.
Yeah.
And the idea that you can deal with these situations militarily is generally thought up here in Washington by people that have never been in a war and seen the results of it.
Let me get another caller in, Betty in Glendale. Hello, Betty.
Good morning. Can your guest tell me what he knows about the sale of nuclear technology to Iran by Halliburton as recently as 2005 in violation of sanctions, as reported in the book Censored 2007 by Peter Phillips? In the same source, Phillips reports that Vice President Cheney's stock rose over 3,000% in 2005. His stock options increased from 240,000 to over 8 million in 2005, as reported by Senator Lautenberg. Didn't he claim to have divested himself from Halliburton?
What he's done is what all these people do when they go into office, they put it into a blind trust so that they can't. Supposedly they can. I don't know how that works.
And do you know anything about Halliburton selling nuclear technology?
That's a rumor that goes around Washington. I suspect, and believe me, there's no love lost between me and the administration. I suspect that would be. I wouldn't for all the sins of Halliburton and generally mismanagement, misuse of money and stuff. I doubt if they would do that. The Iranians buy a lot of their technology from Russia, from the former Soviet Union. They exchange with other countries, other sort of rogue states, if you want to call them, other states that we've sort of labeled as rogue states. But the main problem with Iran is the relationship with Russia, and that's something the administration has to come to grips with too, because that's the other issue. When you're just dealing with Iran, you're not just dealing with Iran; you're dealing with their relationship with Russia and China and North Korea and Pakistan and others. And so it's a much more complicated issue, but they get the thing that I think is feared.
I need to. I'm sorry, Mr. Drumheller. I need to hold you there just for a moment. We have news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio coming right up, and then we'll continue talking with Tyler Drumheller, author of On the Brink. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on this Thursday morning, February the 15th. It's 7:36. We're talking this hour with the author of On the Brink, an insider's account of how the White House compromised American intelligence. Tyler Drumheller was the chief CIA officer in Europe from 2001 to 2005, and sheds a lot of light on how the CIA worked with the White House during the pre-Iraq war years. And his book talks about how the Bush administration used the CIA and its intelligence to achieve its political and policy goals. 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you have a question or thought for our guest in Madison. 263-1890, 263-1890. And one of the revelations in the book is that Tyler Drumheller says, he had information and the White House had information from an Iraqi official who said that Iraq was years away from developing any weapons of mass destruction, but chose to downplay that and upplay other pieces of less reliable intelligence. Let's go to Rich in Rhinelander next. Hi, Rich, you're on the air.
Hi. There are experts and there are experts. There are people with credentials and others with other credentials. But I am just blown away by what is being said here. I didn't want to see the war, but once it started, I actually wanted to see President Bush succeed. And by that I mean, and I'm not proud of it, that I'm probably sort of ethnocentric, like a lot of Americans are. I probably do not have an appreciation for or a good understanding of conservative Islamic societies. I don't understand how they require their women to dress and refuse to educate half their population, and so on and so forth. But what I'm hearing your guests say this morning is that our system of intelligence has essentially been blindsided and has been, in my view, totally corrupted. And what I'm wondering about is, what do I do? I mean, I write to my representative, James Sensenbrenner. I write to my senators. Russ Feingold is definitely on my side of issues. Herb Kohl is okay, although he doesn't take any terrifically brave stands on international policy. But I am really saying there's a sort of coup that went on between the American voter and the executive branch of our government. And by that I mean that they've corrupted the system of use of intelligence. Am I overstating what I'm hearing?
Well, no, you're not overstating. I mean, it's hard for me to say that, too. The fact is, I think it was a lot of this was driven by, I mean, they had a plan when they came in. They were approaching it very gradually in early 2001, after they came into office. They began to shift towards Iraq, and they were making plans. All this was put under much more intense pressure after 9/11, and that changed the view of the people, and it also gave the administration a great deal more freedom to move on these things, even though all these reports about links between al-Qaeda and everything are not true. And, in fact, the same source that told us about the weapons being years away also said there's no link between al-Qaeda and Saddam. And, in fact, Saddam feared al-Qaeda because of al-Qaeda is basically a Sunni organization, a very religious-based organization. Saddam, although he was a Sunni, was a secular sort of socialist nationalist in Arab nationalist. But what I think people have to do, I think 2006 is an interesting lesson. It's like a civics lesson. It's people just, and I'm sort of non-political. I was a Republican my whole life, and now I'm not sure what I am. But I think people realize, the American people finally realize that there's got to be a limit to how far. Again, this is based on an academic theory developed here in Washington. And what you can do when you write your congressman is tell them to take a look. I think they're going to have to start over again. The intelligence law that was drafted after 9/11 and that was done under sort of great political tension in the lead up to the presidential campaign, and a lot of the things that are in it were done for on both sides, Republicans and Democrats, were put in for political purposes. What they need to do is go back and look at what they have. And what has happened with the new legislation is that the whole emphasis on intelligence has moved from the field and from the frontline analysts and operations officers back to Washington. The DNI structure that was the Director of National Intelligence structure that was set up supposedly to connect the dots and make everybody work together and be a sort of a unifying small office has become a 1,700-person bureaucratic monstrosity set down on top of the intelligence community. And in fact, the secret is they need to go back to the beginning with this at you need a small, efficient intelligence service with short lines of command, and separate it from the politicians, separate the intelligence people from the politicians. The one thing your listeners need to know is that there are still very talented, smart, very brave, courageous people that are out in the field collecting intelligence. It's our duty in Washington to make sure it's used properly and that it serves the right purpose. And that's, I think, how you what Congress can do, what they're going to have to do. But it's not going to happen until the next administration because there's such hostility between President Bush and the intelligence community right now anyway.
You know, you weren't very, I shouldn't say kind, but you don't think George Tenet did a very good job either, do you?
Well, I think it's funny. A lot of people say I'm too kind to George in the book. I actually think George Tenet was a very good director. I mean, we were very good friends. And I haven't seen him since this, obviously, but probably knowing how volatile George is, I suspect we're not such good friends anymore. But the fact is, he knows, you know, I mean, I did warn them. I mean, we warned them bureaucratically through the whole fall. We tried to follow the proper procedure, and when things got down, 2002, when they got down to the wire right before Powell's speech, I actually went directly to George and his deputy, John McLaughlin, to warn them. Now, they claim not to remember this, but a lot of people that were there do remember it, and they have to deal with that.
You said that stuff with the moving labs and all that's not verified or that's not good information.
Yeah, it's not good information. And the week before that, I had told his deputy, and I know that he and the deputy shared everything directly, that this source is the source curveball that they were basing this on, that is all the things about the trailers and the biological laboratories, we believe was probably a fabricator. Certainly there was enough questions about it not to use it as part of the justification for a war. And so they knew all of that, and I think that's very hard for them to deal with. What they were doing was basically gambling. There's one of their senior deputies told me, "Now when we get to Baghdad, we're going to find all sorts of stuff, and nobody's going to really care about this anyway. What happened before the war?" And they were gambling that they would. They believed that it was there. They honestly, I think, believed it was there. They were just and they didn't want to go back in. It's very hard to go back into President Bush and tell him that, you know, all the stuff you've been telling him, you've been sort of egging him on with for a while, yeah, is not true.
And you thought that Colin Powell was given the wrong speech.
Well, when I first heard it, I said we had maybe, because what we had done was we had gone through and excised all the sections that had the reporting from the source in it and lined them out, and it was sent back up to his office. And when I heard it, I thought, you know, I've been in the government long enough. I thought, oh, my God, we sent them the wrong speech back. Mm-hmm. But my executive officer said, no, they just ignored you. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Well, we are talking with Tyler Drumheller. He is author of On the Brink, an insider's account of how the White House compromised American intelligence. Tyler Drumheller was with the CIA for 25 years. He was the former intelligence agency chief of European operations from 2001 to 2005. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, about 13 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, we'll talk presidential politics and presidential primary issues that are cropping up. New poll out showing that Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani are the front runners in their respective parties. We'll talk about the various issues cropping up on the campaign trail coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about intelligence being used for political ends, how the Bush administration did that, according to our guest, who is the former chief of CIA operations in Europe, Tyler Drumheller. He wrote about his experience in his book, On the Brink, an insider's account of how the White House compromised American intelligence leading up to the war in Iraq. Gary in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hello, Gary. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. Listen, I called in because I've been watching Tyler's book and sort of public persona in the last few months, and I have been delighted to see that an old friend that I played rugby with at the University of Virginia has taken this sort of important role in advancing the discussion. And to simply say that whether your listeners agree or disagree with Tyler, that I recall him as a person of toughness, intelligence, and unfailing good humor and generosity of character. Yeah.
Well, isn't that nice? Do you remember Gary Tyler?
Gary, were you Chicago? Was that?
Of course.
Well, hi. How are you? How are you doing, man?
I'm great. I am great. I have only two other remarks. I think that what everybody should remember is that while Tyler and I played rugby at Virginia, George Bush played rugby at Yale. And sure, there's probably nothing that makes for harder heads.
That's true. That's very true. He was a fullback at Yale. That's right.
Right. Well, I think we played in the forwards.
That's right.
More, direct body contact there.
That's right. Well, thanks, Gary.
I hope that when I get to Washington, I'll be able to look you up and find out what happened to Reeve Trott.
I just saw him. Okay, look me up, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Gary. It's a small world, isn't it?
Good grief. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Well, why did you, Tyler Drumheller, want to reveal your story in this book?
I stayed with this as long as I could with the tried to work it through the system, and at the end of the day, during the presidential election of 2004, when I saw the way the president was setting out, and I wasn't a terrific fan of John Kerry's, but I said, you know, there's something's got to be different. And I saw the way the president was, as I said earlier, sort of saying, well, I was only doing what I was told to do, you know, by the intelligence community, which is not true. And it was a lot of people have said, why did you stay that long? And I said, part of it, I felt the obligation to the couple thousand young officers who worked for me there at the time, and I to try and bring some rationality to the system. But at the end, I realized that I had reached, because I had just complained too much, and I had reached the limit of what I could do effectively, and after all these years, it was time for me to go. I just I was becoming more of a problem than a help, and I thought I could do more on the outside. And I left. It was a tough decision because I really haven't done much in my life except go to school and do this.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Aren't you sworn to some sort of secrecy as a CIA official?
Yes, I have a lifelong secrecy agreement with the agency. That's why this book. I think some people are surprised. This book was completely vetted by the agency. It took them over a year to go through it. That wasn't all their fault. They were actually very good about it. Mm-hmm. It was some of it involved negotiation between them and the publishers. But there were a number of stories that they took out. But as you see, it affects the, you know, I don't know. It's, I'm certainly not Ernest Hemingway, but it affects sort of the continuity of the book. But it is. I think it came across okay. And they took a couple of. There are really only two stories that I wished I'd been able to leave in. The others were interesting. I think people would have found them interesting. But two stories that applied to the heart of the book, and they took those out. But a lot of them they left in. And the curveball story was left in almost completely because it was covered in great detail by the Silverman Robb report. And what I did was just add the I put it into terms I think that people can understand, having lived through it. So, no, this was totally vetted by the agency, as is everything that I write from now on.
Let me bring in David in Fenimore. Hi, David.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for writing the book.
Thanks.
Thank you for being willing to tell the truth. In response to one of your earlier callers, I'd just like to say there is a wild man trying to control Mideast oil, and he lives in the White House. You know, it's hard to overstate the implications of what you've written. I think it qualifies as high crimes myself.
Yeah, let me ask if you would agree with that, Tyler Drumheller.
You know, that's a question I get asked all the time, and I think having gone through and seen what the country goes through and during the Clinton administration with the impeachment process. It's probably bad for the country, but certainly I think that the justice for this is again, I said, that's why I said the election of 2006 was a civics lesson. I think the American people have finally figured a lot of this out, and no matter what is sort of said to them and how things are shaped, that's run its course. But there are a lot of people that feel very strongly the way he does.
Yeah, thank you, David. Jake in Menasha is with us now. Hi, Jake.
Hi, good morning. This is related to an earlier comment about public exposure of your guest subject.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if your guest could comment about why the mainstream media has not picked up on this story in a large measure. And I'll listen for your comments off the air.
Well, I know, Tyler Drumheller, that you've been interviewed a lot lately.
Well, I think a lot of people would say it's been picked up. Mm-hmm. You see my face too much on TV. But I was on 60 Minutes did a story on it, and they had NBC and a lot of the cable news shows. I don't know. I think people, I'm happy with the coverage it's gotten. It didn't involve, they didn't, part of the reason maybe that there wasn't more, say like with Valerie Plame's case, is that they didn't really come after me because there's very little they could come after me on. I mean, they know, I know what I'm talking about, and the only shot they really took at me was last summer. Senator Roberts and Senator Hatch tried to put something into the Phase 2 report, and when it was not, saying that the reporting from the one source was inaccurate and that I had miscast it, and in fact, it wasn't put in the report, they added it as a letter of addendum. But that got no play because I think people, I haven't made any claims that I can really substantiate.
Yeah. So, since you, I wanted to ask you about the Valerie Plame case,
mm-hmm.
and whether you, do you look as though the Bush administration did out a covert CIA agent in a way to hush or punish one of its critics?
I think they wanted to punish Wilson. I don't think they intend. I think they sort of stumbled into the thing with Valerie Plame because I think they didn't realize that she was a case officer. They thought they tried to cast her as an analyst or a secretary or a clerk or that sort of thing. And in fact, she was, a clandestine operations officer. And what they wanted to do was show that Wilson had been sent there as sort of a junket, as sort of a set up by his family. And they did it without really thinking it all the way through or getting all their facts straight. Then once they were into it, and they certainly set out to blacken Wilson's name and make him look highly partisan and just taking advantage of the system. The Libby trial is fascinating. I'm more interested in why there hasn't been more outrage over the testimony in the Libby trial, which bears out a lot of what I've been saying.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of the attitude of the administration to, that this is their policy, and no matter what other people say, they're going to attack them. But I think they stumbled into the situation with Valerie because they didn't realize exactly who she was, and when they got into it, then they started shifting around and pointing at each other and at the different people in the press. So that's a convoluted way of saying I think they certainly punished Wilson. They wanted to punish Wilson. They wanted to show that if you criticize the administration, you have to pay a price for it.
Yeah.
And in doing that, they wanted to use his wife's name. They didn't realize that they were sort of sticking their hand into the hornet's nest with that.
One last call. We're almost out of time. Bill in La Crosse.
Hello. Thank you for that quick call. I want to make a comment that those people who would criticize what some have called the so-called experts, people like Mr. Tyler, who have written these books, particularly when you come out of the CIA, if you're going to criticize them, keep in mind that they have something to lose. He's not in the CIA anymore, I assume, but he still has something to lose. The people who expose these things have an awful lot of credibility because they're the ones that have something to lose. not the ones. I mean, when you look at how the Bush administration is treating dissenters, Libby and Wilson, and there are others, I give these people an awful lot of credibility.
Bill, thank you so much. And we have, I'm sorry, only 30 seconds, Mr. Drumheller. What do you want to see happen from books like yours?
Well, in my case, I hope they use it as a cautionary tale to show what not to do with intelligence and how the service should be restructured in a much smaller, less expensive, more efficient manner.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks,
Tyler Drumheller, 25-year-plus veteran of the CIA. He was the chief of European operations from 2001 to 2005. And he is the author of On the Brink, an insider's account of how the White House compromised American intelligence. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store 1-800-747-7444. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.